Welcome to Product Brand Management Chapter 4. This is an important chapter where we'll be studying brand values, image, identity and personality. The objective of this chapter is to understand the concepts and differences between brand value, image, identity and personality. So let's get into all these different concepts separately. First of all, brand values. Brand values are integral to the product and the brand management process. Anything that makes a consumer pay something extra to a certain brand for a certain product actually comes under brand values. To understand this better, let's look at what the buying consideration process looks like. So if you see over here, it says needs, benefits sought, choice criteria, products, features and supplier and the brand chosen. This is a process. Look at it from the point of view, for example, if you want to buy airline tickets online. Your need is to buy airline tickets online. The benefits you seek are to be able to buy tickets online in a simple way, the cheaper tickets, for instance. So the benefits you seek are that you need to be able to go to a website that has a choice of all airlines and from which you should be able to choose something that you want, choose the fares that you want. And that becomes your choice criteria. Is the website simple to use? Does it have a choice of all the airlines that I want? Does it have the cheapest fares available on the airline? So right now you have a choice of say, Make My Trip, Clear Trip, Yatra, Go Ibibo. So all of these come in this category, benefits sought and choice criteria. From these choice criteria, you will actually look at the product and service features. So you have criteria like, for example, like I said, simplicity, fare availability, airline availability, all of these are already there. Basis these criteria, you'll actually look at the different products that are available, the different websites in this case that are available, like Make My Trip, Clear Trip, Go Ibibo, Yatra, whatever. You'll look at them, you'll look at their features, and basis your choice criteria, you'll choose one supplier. That supplier or brand is what you'll choose. Now, for this, you need certain core values. These core values express the brand's motivation and boundaries. These are what offer a competitive advantage. So for example, in this example that I was talking about as far as airline tickets are concerned, if the core value of one of the core values of Clear Trip is simplicity or ease of use, then in that case, if that core value appeals to me as a consumer, then that will make a big impact in my buying decision, in my choosing my supplier decision. The brand personality in many ways is actually derived from these core values. Core values can be expressed through various communication and promotional media and are valued by consumers. The brand's core values guide the advertising agency in finally formulating a strong and impactful creative strategy. So in our case, in the case of this online ticketing as I was talking about, for example, if one of the core values of Clear Trip is simplicity and cleanliness of the interface itself, then that is actually expressed through various communication and promotional media. If you notice, a lot of ads of Clear Trip when they were actually advertising were based on the fact that it is simple to use. Now that core value guided their ad agency in formulating an impactful creative strategy. So the next thing that we'll be looking at is brand value propositions. A value proposition is basically, at the end of it all, a what's in it for me statement, which means that even though it's not addressed to consumers, but it drives the communication that's sent out to consumers. If I'm a consumer and if I'm interacting with a brand, I should be very clear about what is in it for me if I use this brand. What is the benefit? What is the need gap that the brand is addressing? Now, value propositions have been, the way to make value propositions have been actually postulated by different brand strategists in different ways. Hope and Player and Kotler and Armstrong actually suggested that we take into account product leadership, operational excellence of the company, and consumer intimacy with the brand. These three things come together to make this what's in it for me statement, or what we call a value proposition. On the other hand, Anderson, Naris and Rossum came up with saying that all the benefits that a brand actually gives to the consumer, along with favorable points of difference, gives you a resonating focus, and that focus finally forms the value proposition. There is a schematic, there's a model for building a value proposition. This is what we call a value proposition builder. Here, if you see, The first thing that leads to a value proposition is the market. Then is the value experience, offerings, benefits, alternatives and differentiation, and the proof. So let's look at it from the point of view of any of these online ticketers, ticketing websites that we were talking about. What is the market? The market is a certain demographic, a certain location, a certain geography, for example, airline travelers in India, if that's the market. What is the value experience that we are looking for? So if it's a Cleartrip, the value experience that is being provided by Cleartrip is a simple, clean interface. What are the offerings and benefits? They also provide hygiene offerings and benefits. So the fares, the lowest fares are available, the lowest fares amongst all websites may not be available. Maybe the fares are actually the same across websites. But as a hygiene factor, the offering and benefit is that even if you go to this website, you will be able to get a fairly low fare. Alternatives and differentiation. What are the alternatives to it? The alternatives are the other websites, for example, a Make My Trip or a Go Ibiba or a Yatra. Now, what is the differentiation between the alternatives and this particular website that we are talking about? That again comes from the value experience. That comes from the core values. For example, simplicity. Finally, the proof. When the consumer is finally looking at the website, is the value that has been communicated to the consumer actually present, physically present? So like I said in the last chapter, when Ask Me shut down, the role of brand communication will be to create sampling to a product. But if a customer comes to a product and the promise that has been made during communication is not fulfilled to the customer will not come back to use the product again. Which is why the proof is really, really important. I can, as Cleartrip, say whatever I want about the simplicity and about the lowest fares availability and all of that. But at the end of the day, if a consumer actually is impacted by that communication and goes to the website and finds that it is not simple to use, the fares are not the lowest available, then they will not come back because there is no proof. These elements, therefore, are what go into making a great value proposition. But value proposition also comes from value. So let's see what value creation looks like. This is a basic value creation model. An opportunity which is identified, developed, value is produced for the opportunity, value is added, and value is retained. This is the value creation chain. We will look at value creation in a little more detail. McDivitt and Wilkinson actually said that if you understand your consumer, know your differentiation, quantify the differentiators, and then communicate the differentiated value, you're then creating value. But value also, if you notice this is all about what is your consumer, what is your differentiation, you're quantifying your differentiators, which means that all of these are still talking about functional benefits. Values exist beyond functional benefits. When we spoke about the Mercedes example in the last to last session, we were talking about emotional and self-expressive benefits as well. Value beyond functional benefits exists in emotional, self-expressive, and social ways. Let's look at a more interesting value chain model, the Porter's value chain model. If you notice this, there are primary activities and there are support activities. The entire value creation process in inbound logistics, operation, outbound logistics, marketing, sales, and service is supported by the organization, human resources, technology, purchasing, admin, all of these things. They work in tandem to create value, and that is what Porter has postulated. Porter says the primary activities of inbound logistics, operations, outbound logistics, marketing, sales, and service, these actually form the basic value, and the support activities ensure that this value is created and delivered to the right consumer. To be able to create value on a regular basis, what you also need for your product or service is what is called a cost advantage. Cost advantages can be derived from various strategies. Economies of scale, for example, if you have a lot of volume as a certain provider, as a certain service provider or a product seller, then that volume will typically give you higher margins overall. For example, the whole model of Flipkart and Amazon revolves around getting the maximum number of consumers into their fold. More the number of consumers, more the small margins per consumer actually translate into a large overall revenue. right? Then the second thing that gives you a cost advantage is learning. As you are in the business for a little while, you start learning about how to actually optimize your processes. That learning starts giving you ways to cut your costs or optimize your costs. And that learning then gives you a cost advantage. Capacity utilization. So for example, if you are a magazine publisher, if you have a printing press, normally a magazine publisher will have 7 or 8 titles with them. For example, if they have only one title, if an India Today group has only India Today one magazine, the printing press will be idle for most of the time in the month. If it's a fortnightly magazine, if it takes 2 days to print the magazine, then other than those 2 days, for the rest of the 12 days in the fortnight, the printing press is actually lying idle. Now, can they use that idle time, that idle capacity, to actually print more magazines? Which is exactly what they do. They utilize their capacity, and that gives them a cost advantage, which means that per unit cost of producing their magazines goes lower, which means that even their flagship magazines can be sold at a lower cost to the consumer, and that gives them a cost advantage. Similarly, there are linkages amongst activities, interrelationships amongst business units that can give you cost advantages. For example, if you have a Tata group, and if Tata Motors wants a certain software module to be developed, and they go out to some other company like a Sapient or an IBM, that is not cost advantages. If they go to a TCS, which is a part of the same group, they'll probably get a better cost advantage. The degree of vertical integration, timing of market entry, the firm's policy of cost or differentiation, geographical location, and other institutional factors, all these things actually give cost advantages to a certain company. So we've talked about value creation, we've talked about cost advantages. Now let's look at what are the basic drivers of uniqueness. Policies and decisions of a company can be drivers of uniqueness. If the company has a vision at the very top to be able to differentiate their products, then that policy that they make or those decisions that they make will actually drive uniqueness in the product or service and the brand. The linkages amongst activities are other drivers of uniqueness. The timing of launch, the location of your, for example, the location of where your plant is, the interrelationships between your various departments or your various companies in the same group, the learnings that you glean, the integration that you have within your value chain, the scale at which you produce your products, the institutional factors, these are all drivers of uniqueness. Now, uniqueness in terms of creating value, in terms of brands, can also be looked at from the point of view of Levitt's 4-level brand model. Now, from top to bottom, from a generic brand all the way down to a potential brand, the value that a brand gleans from the market is a little bit more. So for example, a generic brand, a generic product really is a product that which is completely agnostic as far as a brand is concerned. So for example, if I'm using steel, I don't care where the steel is manufactured. I don't care if it's Tata Steel, or I don't care if it's some other company making steel. It doesn't matter. If I'm looking for a petrol pump, it doesn't matter to me whether it's Bharat Petroleum or HP or Indian Oil. It does not matter. It is a generic product. Therefore, even if you have brands there, the differentiation is really low. The second level is expected brand, which means that there is a generic level of product parity that you have, a generic product parity that you have, but on top of that there is a small layer of brands. For instance, till a few years ago there was only one board of electricity in one city. This was true for all of India, but now you actually have multiple boards of electricity supplying the electricity to individual homes. Now if you look at it this way, tomorrow if you have a choice in a certain address to be able to get electricity from a Tata or a Reliance or a BEST in Bombay, you will also have a preference for these brands, because maybe they give you electricity at lesser cost per unit, or maybe their electricity supply is good, or maybe you feel that their service is better. But today, they're expected brands, in the sense you expect a certain product parity, you expect a certain service, you expect uninterrupted power supply. The next level in Levitt's 4-level brand model is what we call an augmented brand. So similarly, we keep layering benefits on each of these So there's a product parity, there's an expectation of quality, an augmented brand will have even more values, and a potential brand will have the highest level of differentiation between brands, which means that if there is a product, the value of a certain brand, the value that a certain brand brings to a product or a product category is so large that you actually have a lot of loyalty or a lot of preference for a certain brand. We can also look at value in terms of Kano's value dimensions. Kano says basic value, expected value, and unanticipated value are the basic dimensions of value, of value creation. Now, basic value is the value that is hygiene. That, for example, if you're in an airline, the airline is supposed to fly you from point A to point B. That is basic value. There is no compromise on that. Then there is expected value. You also expect the airline to have pursers or air hostesses or flight stewards. You expect them to have a competent pilot and a co-pilot. You expect them to have air conditioning. That is all expected value. But if a certain purser, or if as a policy decision, all the pursers and stewards and stewardesses actually come to you and give you personalized attention and make you feel really happy about traveling in that airline, or give you really tasty food on the airline, that is unanticipated value. That is not something you expect. And these are the levels in which you can actually create value into your own brand. Now let's look at the concept of brand image. A brand can be viewed as a composite image of everything that people associate with it. So in the functional, emotional, social, and psychological dimensions, whatever people associate with a brand becomes the brand image. Now this is an important concept, because you have to understand, a brand image is what a consumer perceives of a brand. It is not necessarily what a brand wants the consumer to perceive. And that is a very important difference as we learn as we go forward. Brand image has an emphasis on symbolism, it has an emphasis on meaning or messages, it has an emphasis on personification as well. Cognitive or psychological elements are also given importance as far as brand image is concerned. So for example, what a consumer actually perceives of a certain brand has an emphasis on personification. A lot of us, even subconsciously, think of certain brands in a human form. For example, if a State Bank of India were to walk into my room, if a State Bank of India were a person and it walked into my room, who would State Bank of India look like? Would it be a slightly older gentleman, say 65 to 70 years old? They would be probably wearing a great, very sharp suit. They'd probably have white hair, but they would look stern and strict, and they would look like they're stickler for rules, but they're still intelligent and competent. Now that's the personification I have formed with the State Bank of India brand. Now that is their image in my head. That is not necessarily the image that State Bank of India wants to give out. So let's look at the concept of brand image a little further. There is experience or exposure, which means that you are experiencing a brand or you're exposed to a certain brand or its communication. Basis that, you form a certain perception of the brand. The perception of the brand is in form of brand personality and brand associations. And this finally leads to the brand image. So all this is about the consumer perception. Perception is the key word here. This is the consumer's perception. Now let's look at what makes a consumer actually take a buying decision. We'll look at the theory of reasoned action. Now this is about beliefs, attitudes, intentions, and behaviors. This particular example is about the behavior of exercise. What would make a person exercise? This theory is based on the fact that if I have a certain belief about the outcome, I will form certain attitudes based on those beliefs. So for example, belief about the outcome of the behavior is, if I exercise, I will improve my health and lose my excess weight. Evaluations of the outcome is, being healthy and slimmer is more enjoyable and they're pleasant circumstances for me. Now these two lead to an attitude to a specific behavior. Therefore, exercise would be a good thing for me to do. This leads to, along with the other subjective norm of attitude, leads to a behavioral intention. For example, I am going to start exercising tomorrow. And finally, behavior, which is the actual exercise, happens. So this is called the theory of reasoned action. This behavior, we took the example of exercise, but buying behavior can also be taken in account using this particular model. You have certain beliefs, basis which you form certain attitudes, and basis those attitudes, there's an intention that gets formed in your brain. The intention will be of the that I intend to buy this brand because of this attitude or this belief. And finally, the behavior, which is buying the brand or buying the product, happens. Now, a very, very important concept in brand management is that of brand identity. Now, I spoke about brand image, where I said that brand image is based on the perception that a consumer has of a brand. It is not necessarily what a brand wants the consumer to think. But the closer these two are together, the better it is for the brand. If I am a brand and if I want to say something to a consumer about myself, if I want to depict a certain personality or a certain image to a consumer, and if the consumer is thinking something completely different, then I'm not happy as a brand. On the other hand, if the consumer and I are thinking similarly, then I'm happy as a brand, because whatever I've invested in building my image has worked. For this, a very important concept is that of brand identity. Now, brand identity is a unique set of associations that the brand strategist wants to create or maintain. Basically, these are the associations that I as a brand manager would want to build into my brand. Now, this is what the brand manager wants the consumer to think. These associations are words or phrases, and we'll look at some models of brand identity in detail. But the components of brand identity are vision, culture, positioning, personality, communications, relationships, presentation styles, and brand elements. Now let's look at the relationship between brand elements and brand identity. Memorability, meaningfulness, aesthetic appeal, transferability, adaptability, and legal protectability. These were what brand elements really led to. But from here, when we get on to brand identity, this will explain it a little better. This is what we call the Kaffer's brand identity prism. Now, if you look at it, there's a picture of the sender, there's a picture of the recipient. This part is externalization and this part is internalization. Brand identity, like I said, is a set of associations that the brand strategist wants to build into the brand. What is the physique that the brand strategist wants to build into the brand? What is the personality? What is the relationship of the brand with the consumer? The recipient is actually the consumer of the brand, and the sender is the brand himself. So the reflection of the recipient, external reflection of the recipient, that is one part of the associations, and the self-image that we think the recipient has is the internal part of the picture of the recipient. The culture of the company and the personality of the brand also have very specific roles to play in this. So, what we really do when we are using brand identity prism, Kaffer's brand identity prism, is we put in specific associations of personality, physique, relationship, culture. For example, if you want to depict that our company is a friendly company, is a customer-focused company, then that will come under culture. So those are associations that will be written in this part of the prism. Then there is self-image. What does the recipient think, or what we want the recipient to think of themselves, what we want the consumer to think of themselves when they're using our brand? So for example, if I'm consuming a Levi's 501 jeans, what is my self-image? My self-image is that I'm a basic dresser. I am not into overt fashion, but I want comfort. I'm really concerned about my comfort. So that those words, concerned about comfort, for instance, will come in self-image. A reflection of the recipient. What does the recipient look like when he's using the brand? So for example, if I'm using a Levi's 501, if I'm wearing a Levi's 501, what do I look like? That is an external reflection. What are those words? The words could be, the person looks comfortable in his skin. So that comes as a part of reflection. What is the relationship between the sender, the brand, and the recipient, which is the consumer? The relationship of a Levi's 501 with the consumer is what? It's a friendly relationship. It's a relationship of comfort. It's a relationship wherein I as a consumer feel very, very comfortable just wearing or using that brand. Similarly, we put in different associations in different quadrants of this particular prism, and map the brand identity hence. So these are the basic elements of the brand identity prism: physique, personality, culture, relationship, reflection, and self-image. Now there are other ways to map a brand identity. For example, the Akers brand identity model. The Akers brand identity model, first of all, differentiates associations that we want to build into the brand in four main parameters: brand as a product, as an organization, as a person, and as a symbol. As a product, we have to look at brand associations from the point of view of product scope, product attributes, quality, uses, the users, the country of origin. These six sub-parameters within the brand as a product main parameter basically reflect the fact that, for example, the country of origin. What does an association with Germany mean to you? Should that be a part of a brand as a product? If I'm a German company and if I want to build an association that I'm German, the inherent associations with that come out to be great quality, on time, great engineering background. So all of those things. So for example, when Opel first launched in India, their tagline was the height of German engineering. The height of German engineering is eventual communication, but it came from your brand identity. The brand identity within that brand as a product, the country of origin, had an association of German, which is where it came from, which is where it originated, which is where the communication originated from. What is the product scope? What are the product attributes? We have to write associations for the brand that we want to build in as brand managers as separate words under these parameters. Similarly, brand as an organization. What are the organization attributes? For example, innovation. Do we have customer concern? Do we have trustworthiness? Are we a local company? Are we a global company? We map brand identity using these things. Brand as a person. If the brand were to walk in today, if the brand were a person and were to walk in the door, what would I look at the brand as? I just described to you my image of State Bank of India. Now that was an image, that was my perception of State Bank of India. But what does State Bank of India really want to say? Or for example, what does a Google want to depict itself as? What does a Marlboro want to depict itself as? So if a Marlboro were a brand and it were to walk into the door, I would visualize a cowboy with jeans, boots, a hat, a cigarette in his mouth, stubble, rugged, still gentlemanly, still very courteous. I would look at the brand as that, and that's what the brand wants to depict. So these associations will come here in brand as a person. They will write that the brand as a, within the brand as a person, I want to build associations of ruggedness, manliness, cowboy image, gentlemanliness and courtesy. Those things come in the brand identity. Then brand as a symbol. If there is a visual imagery or metaphor or a brand heritage, what does it really want to depict? Every single logo of a brand has a story behind it, and that is a part of the brand identity. According to Aker, the brand identity is further, once you have all these associations ready, you then differentiate them into the brand essence, core and extended identity. The core and extended identity actually are derived from this mapping of brand identity. The brand essence, of course, is the basic values of the brand, and the core identity and extended identity are different associations which are picked up from these four parameters in which we already differentiated the associations, and they are placed in that particular schematic. The core identity is the identity, the associations that will not change no matter where the brand goes. So if I'm launching a new product or if I'm launching in a new market, those brand associations will still remain the same. That is my core identity. Then there are some associations which are still inherent to me as a brand, but which may change over time. Those are called extended identity. For example, if we look at a McDonald's, the golden arches, the M, that is a part of the core identity. The clown, Ronald McDonald, that's a part of the core identity. McCafe is a part of the extended identity because it is available in some countries. It may not be available in some other countries. Now let's look at brand personality. This is another very important characteristic, very important concept. Human demographic characteristics like age, gender, social class, and race, they come under brand personality. So within Akers model, when I say brand as a person, that is what brand personality is also derived from. Traits such as extroversion, agreeableness, dependability, warmth, concern, and sentimentality form brand personality. Basically, the idea is to ensure that a consumer views the brand as a person, because that makes the relationship between a brand and a consumer far more intimate. And when I start as a consumer, when I start looking at a brand as a friend and as a person, I'm far more likely to be loyal to that person or that brand. Jennifer Aker actually gave us a brand personality framework. According to her, sincerity, excitement, competence, sophistication, and ruggedness are the five basic components of the brand personality framework. In sincerity, is your brand down to earth, honest, wholesome, cheerful? Now, down to earth or not down to earth? Or is it a high flying brand? For example, if it's a Facebook, the brand personality of Facebook will not be down to earth. It's a more high flying brand. Or a Virgin Atlantic Airlines, Virgin Group in general, it's a more high flying brand. Excitement, daring, is it daring, is it spirited, is it cool, is it imaginative, what does it look like? Basically, you have to start imagining a brand as a person and start thinking, what would this brand look like if it were like a person? What would be its characteristics like? Creating brand personality requires research. You research, you go out, you conduct studies within your target consumer group, and you actually understand what is it that the consumers already perceive your brand as if it were a person, or what kind of person would the consumers love to interact with. These two things come together to finally make the decision and execute that image associated with real people. This also influences user imagery, which is another concept. User imagery implies when I'm a brand and I'm giving out some sort of brand communication, what are the kind of people I'm depicting using the brand? Now, that may or may not be the same as brand personality. It may be a different concept completely, but it is still a very important concept, because it puts in mind of the consumer a certain concept of, if I'm using this brand, then I am probably one of those people. It helps in relating to the consumer, because sometimes you look at a piece of communication and you think, oh yes, this person looks very similar to me. This person seems to have the same problems that I have in life. All these messages are subliminal. You don't consciously think of them as consumers, you subconsciously think of them. And when you do, that user imagery is actually successful. Now let's look at how important brand personality is. Brand personality is one of the very important factors in actually differentiating the brand from its competition. It helps you gain market share. It's almost impossible to duplicate a brand's identity once you have a strong personality built. You increase the asset value of the brand. The consumers select brands which is congruent with their own self-concept. So this is what I was talking about. If the user imagery that you're using and the brand personality of the brand are similar, and that is also congruent with my self-concept as a consumer, then I'm very, very, very likely to use that brand. The brand personality also creates bonds between the brand and the consumer, and it has the potential to actually inspire brand loyalty. So these are very important concepts. Let's summarize this session. Brand value. Brand value is what buyers are willing to pay for. It is created by combining several elements. We looked at certain concepts of brand value, we looked at benefits, we looked at the value proposition. We also looked at brand images, the overall definitions, the emphasis on the symbology, the emphasis on meanings of messages, the emphasis on personification. We looked at how brand image and identity are different, how brand image is about how a consumer is perceiving the brand versus what the brand might or might not want to tell the consumer. The brand associations we looked at, product attributes, lifestyle, personality, etc. We looked at a lot of associations, and then we used them in the brand identity frameworks. We looked at the Akers brand identity framework, which mentions brand as a product, organization, person, or symbol. And we need to take brand associations and we need to note them down within these four parameters to actually map our brand's identity. A part of this actually leads to brand personality. the factors of which are sincerity, excitement, competence, sophistication, and ruggedness, as given by Jennifer Eaker. And these factors actually help in developing brand personality. Once you develop and implement brand personality through research, decision, and execution, brand personality actually helps differentiate a brand very solidly in the market as opposed to its consumers, as opposed to its competition, and ensures that it is very, very difficult to copy or duplicate a brand's identity. Thank you.